And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. The first Monday of every month from 3 to 4 is Practical Business Solutions, starring Jim Hyten, great attorney from Ragnauer, Hyten and Lewis. In studio guest is David DeCiro, Bank of Arizona, Senior VP. This is an honor to have a Senior VP. Thank you.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I don't know about the Senior VP, but I have been around for 23 years in banking, so I've experienced a couple business cycles, I could tell you that.
Well, I like that, and especially your first name. Okay, just kidding. We both have the same first name. All right, that was my attempt at humor for today. Okay, now what we're going to talk about, we promise the listeners, is really what business should be aware of. Now, you mentioned the balance sheet. Yeah, off there, you mentioned accounting. Better be accurate. It better be accurate. But specifically, what can... Let's start with new businesses, and then let's start with mature businesses that want to expand. What can businesses expect? I mean, obviously, if it's a new business, it's difficult without history to get a loan. But would you advise them, or how would you advise them to plan the next couple years, what they should do, what it should look like to be bankable?
Absolutely. I think you have to take a step back and kind of look at what happened in 07, 08. The pendulum definitely swung way to the right in terms of credit culture, parameters, lending guidelines. And most banks that were having difficulties through those time periods, they were very inwardly focused. They weren't focused on bringing in new business, doing a lot of new loans. They were really focused on cleaning up their balance sheet. What I've seen is the pendulum is now coming more to center, and we're starting to see lending guidelines loosen up again. Mm. I can tell you back in the 90s, working with a bank in Las Vegas, if you were around for a year and you had a certain credit score personally and had any sort of profitability, you could get a business loan for $100,000 completely unsecured. Those days are gone.
Wow.
It's not going to happen. I don't think we're going to get back to that level of looseness, but I do see a lot more prudent lending. And when I mean prudent lending, it goes back to looking at cash flow. Can the business service the debt? Collateral. Character. You know, who are we looking at from a management standpoint? When I talk to a new prospective business owner, the management piece is key to me because they're the ones who are driving the direction of the company. So I need to trust that the management is going to do the right thing to help grow this company and not make decisions that are going to be detriment.
How do you evaluate character?
Very difficult. 23 years in banking with lots of different experiences and, frankly, you know, getting burned a couple times over the years.
That's got to be tough, Jim. Huh?
Yeah, I can imagine. It's not an easy thing to evaluate. But I would also think that your experience gives you, you know, a good level of looking at and reviewing someone and saying, I think this is a good risk or something.
Absolutely. I mean, and there's things that we'll do, background checks. You'll run personal credit bureaus. You will look at their personal financial statement. You will look at their management history, where they've been, what they've been able to accomplish in the past. So there's ways to build, look at that character. And that is a key piece for us when we're talking to business owners. You know, we want to know who we're doing business with, what their goals are, how can we, will we fit into that plan? Mm-hmm. Now, when we're looking at brand new companies coming in, and I know a lot of people will get frustrated, owners will get frustrated because there is not a lot of financing options for those companies. I will tell you that, again, it's key to have that relationship with a banker at whatever level that company is being serviced. And you're going to want to understand what kind of treasury products the bank can provide. And I describe treasury as how do you collect money from your clients and how can the bank make you more efficient? You know, everybody should be using, or most folks should be using scanners to make deposits these days. It's much more efficient, later cutoff time. You're not spending time in the branch lobby.
Yeah.
We look at disbursements. How are you paying your vendors? And then we also look at information reporting. And there's so much great technology out there in terms of how you can be quicker at your collections, maybe delay your payments a little bit, and improve your cash flow cycle.
So give us a couple examples. You said with the deposit end, scanners, that makes a lot of sense. And I thought you just said, you know, how you can improve your collection. Do you help businesses with that?
Absolutely. Well, just by having the scanner in itself,
yeah,
you're going to see next day availability. Most banks will give you next day availability on those funds. So even checks that would typically, if you take them to the branch, there are some institutions that will still put a hold on those funds.
Yeah.
So you will not have access to those funds. So this, most banks, if you're on a scanner, and I don't want to speak for everybody, they will give you next day availability so you can use that money, even though it may not have been collected yet. On the payment side, you know, simply get most, depending on where you're at in the business cycle, you can get a credit card account. So if you can put your purchases on a credit card and take advantage of that 25-day float, it's free money for 25 days, and that's going to improve your cash flow cycle. It's a lot better than, you know, issuing a check. We see a lot of small business companies using bill payment. It's very popular, but when you use bill payment, the money comes out of your account immediately. Typically, a check will be sent to a vendor, and you don't have access to that cash. If you put that same bill on a credit card, you basically have 25 days before you have to pay that bill.
Wow, Jim.
That's great. Well, it's kind of, I guess, the old term that I used to refer to it as account management or something. And as I mentioned to David, that's one of the things I think is important for new businesses to realize. They may not be walking in and being able to get a unsecured line of credit right away or some loan, but they can also, the bank can help them with these types of things on their accounts and just be more efficient.
Absolutely. And they need to be creative about and tenacious about how they capitalize the company. There's many options out there for you. I read an article, venture capital is down about 23%. So it's not just banking, it's across the board. Your funding sources, they're far and few between today than they were 5-10 years ago. But there are organizations I work with like SeedSpot, which is an incubator. It's a small business incubator that will basically help write business plans, will help set up important meetings where you can talk to possibly some venture capital or micro loans. So they need to be tenacious. There's a lot of resources out there. You know, one of the best incubators that I can think of is the Chandler Research Center, which is the ASU conglomerate, where there's probably about 15 different companies right in that incubator right now that hopefully will develop into some very viable companies in the future. And I think Chandler's invested $5.7 million into that incubator. So that's an investment that was well spent.
Wow. So step one, it sounds like pick a banker and develop a relationship, because part of the checklist that you came up with was character. So you're going to get to know people's character as they maybe perhaps implement some of these things that you talked about and they meet with you. Wouldn't that help?
Absolutely. It's like anything in life. If I know you walking in the door, Dave, I'm going to go above and beyond because Dave's a good guy. I know a lot about his business. I know where he's headed, and I'm going to support his growth to the best extent that I can within the policy.
It really does help, Jim. I always make sure, I won't say what bank I use, but this particular bank, I always make sure I know the branch manager and all the key people, because you never know. We just never know. It's just a good thing to do. But one time this bank, well, another branch, wasn't my branch, lost my check, and they couldn't find it, so they deducted it. It was a check from a client, and they actually lost it. But I made a check. I always make check copies, and like the good old-fashioned way, right? Well, the branch manager referred me to the operations manager and say, well, that's all we need, actually, to pay on. I mean, after weeks of other people trying to figure it out, this guy just, because I knew him, and he was, you know, he was, I had a relationship, which is important, like we talked about, and he solved the problem, like, really quickly. Isn't that a good example?
That's a great example, because what you didn't know is that after 9/11, and horrific, but one of the things that happened was that the planes were grounded, so checks weren't getting to the Fed for clearing. So part of the legislation that came out of Check 21 was to do a replacement image and clear through that. So most banks are, especially the larger banks, that's the way we're clearing items.
Exactly.
So you, in the past, you might notice that you wrote a check and it would take about 3 to 4 business days to clear. Now, particularly if you write a large check, you're going to see that check clear pretty quickly, because banks are now exchanging images to clear and settle those items.
So step one, meet your banker. Hopefully it's David DeCiro. That's what I'm hoping for. But really, meet the banker. That's really important. Like the movie, remember Meet the Parents? I don't know why I thought of that. A lot different, but.
Interview your banker.
Yeah.
See what his or her experience level is. What types of industries do they work with? Is that compatible to your business? You know, what type of financing have they done in the past? I think it's really important. In the past, clients would, you know, we'd be asking clients all types of questions when they came to us with a credit request. With what happened in 08, 09, we now have clients asking us, hey, are you going to be around? Are you safe and sound?
Wow.
You know, tell us how the bank is doing. I personally send out our earnings report every quarter to our clients to let them know where the bank is in terms of health and wealth. And I happen to work for a very healthy bank, which I'm fortunate, and we're actually growing in Arizona. I mean, the third quarter, we had a 24% point-over-point increase in loans.
Oh.
So we are out there lending, contrary to the popular belief that banks aren't loosening up the purse strings. We also saw a 74% increase in deposits.
Wow.
So I will tell you, a lot of my clients, you know, not participating in TARP, that does ring true. Now, the further we get away from that event, the long, you know, memories are pretty short. But a lot of the people that I bank with today are proud that they're with a bank that didn't participate in TARP.
Wow, that's sort of cool. Now, another step is have good accounting, and you wanted to talk a little bit about the balance sheet. I wanted you to explain a little bit why that's important. What are some of the elements that a banker looks at when he looks at a balance sheet? What did you see?
Well, what I see typically with smaller companies that are startup in nature, they really don't look at the accounting as a really important piece. And Dave, you know that that's probably the most important piece.
Critical.
Very critical. And many will not go to the balance sheet. I want to know how this company is, the makeup of this company. Is it equity that the owner put in? Is it retained earnings from past cycles? Is it debt? Okay, we're going to look at the current ratio.
And what type of debt.
Exactly. We're going to look at the current ratio. We're going to look at the working capital situation of the company. Those things are very important, and I will tell you they were neglected in the heyday of 04, 06. They weren't looked at as important. But a good guideline is 4-to-1 in terms of leverage. And when we talk about leverage, for every dollar's worth of equity, owner's equity, if you have more than $4 worth of debt, you're borderline not being bankable. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about how do we get a company to be bankable? Okay, that is one of the key factors. So when we're talking about financing that next piece of equipment, we will perform a balance sheet to say, okay, what is this going to do to the leverage of the company? And what can we expect? You know, a lot of it is going to depend on the type of business. You know, we don't see a lot of service companies retaining a lot of earnings in their company.
Right.
They typically will distribute it out. And that makes sense because all they'd be doing is building up cash in their checking account. But when we look at your tooling, your manufacturers, your other types of industries, transportation, logistics, you know, we want to make sure that the owners are being committed to the company and leaving enough capital in the company to withstand the bumps in the road to allow them to grow.
Right.
And, Jim, you were mentioning, actually off the air, you know, a key element in analysis is maybe lease versus purchase. You know, you're talking about some bonds and whether you want to buy equipment or lease equipment. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, we were just talking about that in certain industries where you have certain bonding requirements, when you look at acquiring additional equipment or something, that you look at how that impacts the balance sheet, and the bonding company gets kind of concerned because they see the capital side take a hit because you've added a bunch more debt. Sometimes you're better off to lease the equipment and let the capital stay where it is until you've built up enough where you can, you know, eventually buy it. But there are some industries where your balance sheet is just really critical to what it looks like everywhere. And also following up on the accounting, the other thing we like to do is when we're working with a client is making sure that we keep their books and records up to date, because it's just one of those things where when they go into a bank, we like them to be able to present themselves professionally, that they do have articles and bylaws and they've actually had a stock certificate issued and they've got the minute book that's up to date. So it's just like the accounting that, you know, those things I think help present to a bank a company that's being professionally managed and is not just kind of haphazard and running from one fire to the next.
And does it also, a question to both of you, does it also reflect who their team is? So if you have sloppy accounting, you say, oh, my CPA or non-CPA or enrolled agent or, accountant did it, you're going, and it's that sloppy, you're wondering why they would pick someone like that, right?
Absolutely. And we want to have financial statements in accordance with GAAP. We want to make sure that the reporting is correct. We want to make sure that we get accurate and timely information. And I think I see a lot of business owners struggle in that regards. And not so much your larger companies that are, $15, $20, $30 million annual revenue companies. They don't struggle with that accounting piece. It's the ones that are growing from $1 million to $5 million in annual revenue where we tend to see that they need an upgrade in accounting, an upgrade in reporting, and there's a reluctance or an unwillingness to do that.
Also, on the balance sheet, I'm sure you pay interest in terms of accounts receivable and the aging of that. What are their collection strategies, or do they have half of them over 90 days, and you're wondering, they might be good, but, what's the problem?
Absolutely. It's key, especially if you're looking for the bank to provide that working capital line of credit. That is one of the key things that we're going to analyze, is we're going to look at the diversity of the accounts receivable. Make sure there's no concentrations there that could be a concern. We will also look at the aged receivables. If they're over 90, we better have a good reason. I will tell you that most banks that are putting clients on a borrowing base, which they submit every month to justify what they can borrow on that line of credit, they will look at any accounts over 90 days and ineligible them for the borrowing base. So they will exclude that from what you're able to borrow from the line. So
it is important
to keep on top of your accounts receivable and have a collection policy in place. That way the bank will be more than able to finance future growth as those receivables grow.
Well, and even with the information part of this, Dave, is one of the things I tell people is that when they'll say, well, it's just what the bank needs and this information, this accounting information. And I usually tell them, how do you know what's going on if you don't have this information coming to you? Because it seems to me that the business owner at minimum needs to have that information on a timely basis to see how things are going.
There's no question about that. And I, as a CPA, I just see people really either not paying attention to their accounting, the ones that, maybe have timely accounting, or they can't because they don't have timely accounting. Either one.
Right.
It's bad. I mean, but hopefully the show is now giving listeners some new insight. Like, hey, it's not just from your perspective. What's the bank's perspective? They're the ones that are going to have to approve the loan. Doesn't that make sense? Now, go ahead, David.
No, absolutely. And when you're looking at the approvers of a loan, whether it is single approval authority, or you have a credit committee, or you have somebody approving it out of state, one of the first things they're going to look at is what is the reliability of the financial information, because that is what we have in terms of proving up the loan.
Mm-hmm.
We have to say that we made a loan to this company because, and one of those reasons has to be good accounting. We have to have good, reliable information.
And how do you know that? I mean, how do you – it's not just the presentation, but I'm sure you're probably well-versed in analyzing the relationship between all the financial statements, P&L and balance sheet, cash flow, those type of things.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, the balance sheet should balance.
Yes.
As the name implies, it'd be nice. And I've seen it not balance, believe it or not.
Wow.
We typically, in the equity section, you're going to see some unexplained adjustments. And that could be distributions. It could be prior period adjustments. It could be a variety of things. I've seen an accounts receivable aging for the same date where it's a different number on the aging than it is on the balance sheet.
Really?
Really. So those are some of the real live examples that when you go to the bank, you definitely do not want to have that occurring with the financial statements that you're providing the client.
Credibility, right?
It is credibility.
And then you don't know what to believe, right?
Correct.
That is scary. I didn't have any clue about a balance sheet that doesn't balance. If you, I mean, that's just...
Well, you're a CPA. You shouldn't.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's like, that's right. That's just, that goes with the territory. Well, let's take another quick break, and when we come back, let's talk about maybe some legal issues. Jim, how do you, from an attorney's point of view, view the bank in terms of, do you need, you should always look at a loan agreement, and maybe we'll ask, do you prepare the loan agreement? Does the bank do it? I'm sure at a minimum you review it, and we'll be right back.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or a reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches. 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762, or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is Practical Business Solutions, starring Jim Hynten from Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis. We have David DeCiro in studio, Bank of Arizona Senior VP. And, Jim, you had a really good question that I think a lot of businesses want to know today.
Well, I think that, you know, with the economy the way it's been the past few years, I mean, a lot of the small business people that I've represented, it's been survival. You know, they've had their location, they're surviving, they're getting through it. Now they kind of see it's getting a little brighter out there, getting a little better. They've come through the worst. They kind of feel like they now can actually look at trying to expand. And so whether it be like a restaurant company or some other retail that says, okay, we think we've got a location to expand, we think we have a plan to expand, but we need to get the financing. What do they bring to the bank as a package, or what should they bring to the bank as a package to let them review and the whole expansion question?
Well, if it's a current client who is a current borrowing client, the bank should be getting their financial statements periodically, whether that's quarterly, semi-annually, or annually, depending on what the current relationship is. And even if you're not a borrowing client, you should be providing financial statements to your banker and getting feedback mm-hmm. about what the banker would like to see to help you grow, to help you get that expansion. But what they're typically going to look at is a bank will look at the financing request. They'll look at the historical cash flow. And most banks will look 1 to 2 years historically. So they will apply that new debt in a philosophical, in a pro forma, and say, okay, could they have afforded this debt with their current business operations for the last 2 years? Now, if they signed a new contract or they have this growth spurt or they're anticipating new revenue and new profitability because of this expansion, that's where the projections are going to come in, because the request may not support itself historically,
right,
the new debt
right.
load. But going forward, if they know that they have a new contract, it's going to have X amount of profitability, they need to show that to the bank and explain that. And usually it is in the form of handing them that new contract, handing them performance that show what the profitability will be on that new contract. So the bank can then extrapolate that data, put it in on a go-forward basis to make sure that they are going to be able to debt service that, that they'll be able to cash flow that new debt that you're putting on the books. That's going to be a key important part. You also have to look at, what again, what that's going to do to the balance sheet. Is it going to over leverage the company? And that's something that we will look at on a pro forma basis as well.
You know, that's kind of one of the things that I've had clients come to me recently and talk about, has been this idea that, you know, they've been in this survival mode for a couple of years. They look at it and they come in and they say, but now I'm ready to open the new store, you know, mm-hmm. the expansion store. And they say, you know, I've always looked at this location and thought this is where we should be, that we can make this work. And but like you say, the problem is over the last 2 years, it's been rough for all these guys. But now they have some optimism that they can really make this go. So it's interesting to hear about how you look at the projections, so that there's a way of looking at what it will look like when it, if they do the expansion.
And I'll tell you, Jim, the request does have to stand on its own at some level.
Mm-hmm.
But the projections are going to be important, because maybe we look at an SBA program to mitigate the fact that we're looking at projections, that we're doing this not on a backwards look but a forward look. So the SBA has several different programs out there. The Small Business Administration will provide a guarantee to your financial institution. The guarantees range anywhere from 50% on their smaller express-type products, which go up to about $350,000 or $500,000 if you're involved in the military, ex-military. The larger programs, which is the 7A, they'll provide guarantees up to about 75% of the debt. So a bank looking at that loan is going to say, okay, I know that I'm covered for 75% of the exposure of that credit. So they're going to be willing to look at doing that projection-based loan, because they're going to have that SBA guarantee. Now, everybody talks about SBA and the nightmare stories, and I will tell you that it's not as bad as it used to be. It's pretty streamlined, especially if you're with a bank that's a preferred SBA lender.
So I was going to ask you, yeah.
And we are a preferred SBA lender.
Mm, great.
So it's not what it used to be in terms of paperwork and red tape and time. There is a little longer to do an SBA loan. It is a little bit more expensive because you are paying that guarantee fee. So that's part of the deal, is that you have to pay for the amount that the SBA is guaranteeing. But that would be a way to look at a projection-based loan, where you have someone opening up a brand new location and wanting to grow in that manner, and not having that historical performance to prove out that he can carry that debt on his existing operation.
Are the SBA loans, they have prepayment penalties in most of them, or are they not prepayment penalties?
Initially, in the beginning end, beginning part of the term, there are some prepayment penalties, but those phase out over time.
Okay.
So
okay.
They're a lot less stringent than they used to be.
Right.
So if, let's say that someone didn't go the SBA route, barring they have a new contract, instead they just said they have a new market, a new product, new service, or different ways of doing it, how credible is that? I mean, that's harder. I mean, you come in with a new contract, a commitment from a year on a reputable company, that's one thing. But if you just say, hey, we have this new product and we've done feasibility studies and we think this is going to go, that's a little bit more difficult, isn't it?
It is, and it's going to be a tough call, and not all banks are created equal. So I would encourage the listeners out there to be tenacious. If they don't get the answer that they like from their current institution, is really go out and talk to 5-10 different banks. There's different lending appetites out there, and different banks will focus on different industries. So they really need to make a concerted effort, if they're not getting the answer from their current institution, that they need to go talk to several other institutions to see if there is an appetite at a certain bank to do that type of lending. But historically, we're always going to look back and see, how has the business done in the past? How has it grown its profitability? How has it grown its revenues? And if we see that historically taking place, there is a lot of banks that will go out there and finance that next request.
So what you're also, how about the, how do you react to this concept? The quickest loan is not always the best loan.
I think that's a very wise. You need to be, you know, somebody, I think we mentioned the loan agreement. I think.
Yeah,
right,
okay.
Right.
So borrowers need to understand what they're signing, what they're getting themselves into. You know, there will be a clause in the loan agreement where no new debt is allowed from the bank. Well, most borrowers won't even know that. And then they'll go out and buy a truck or buy a lease, and they could be in default of their loan agreement. So having an attorney look over what you're signing, if you don't understand it, is key, because you want to know what you're getting yourself into. If there's covenants around the loan, financial covenants,
right,
you want to know what those financial covenants are and make sure that you are going to be able to live within the constraints of those financial covenants.
And that's a really good point, because when I work on something like that, I mean, there's a lot of different parts of the loan that are going to be more legally driven than financially driven. But on the financial covenants, I mean, I will always mark those out. I will give them to my client, the borrower, and say, read these. If you don't understand them, ask your questions now, because later on it will be a lot more difficult. So, you know, I usually make sure that they can look me in the eye and say, I understand these. I understand what my limitations are.
I agree that they're very excited about getting the financing. They're excited about their growth prospects, but they ignore the language in the loan agreement and the loan documents. And that could be a potential pitfall for any business owner.
Right.
So how much, Jim and David, do attorneys and bankers negotiate? So you see a loan agreement, maybe it's a big one or maybe a small one, and you say, well, no, we don't like this provision. What happens?
Well, there's some back and forth. I mean, you know, I've been on both sides of the transaction. So, I mean, you know, sometimes the bank has a certain standard loan agreement that they want to try and stay close to, which I don't disagree with, because they have so many loans and they want to not have a custom loan agreement for every single loan they have out there. So there will be some provisions they'll say, no, we just have to have that. So we know that. Other provisions we can work with, and maybe like on the financial covenants, is sometimes what we'll do is it doesn't exactly apply to our client's business. It's a little unclear, so we'll clear it up. You know, we'll make sure the language is clear so that both the bank and the client understand this is what you can and can't do in connection with this financial ratio or financial covenant.
Well, that makes sense. And David, is it fairly easy to have some of these provisions change in the loan agreement, or is it more you don't want, like Jim said, a lot of, or other banks at least don't want a lot of customized loan agreements?
It depends. It really depends. And I hate to say it, a lot of it is going to be based on the size of the transaction.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So your smaller loans, most banks will have boilerplate docs, okay, and they're very stringent about changing those documents.
Right.
Now, when you get into larger credit facilities, there is probably a little bit more room for negotiation, and it's probably prudent to do so, because we are talking about a lot of moving parts. We are talking about a client who's a little bit more sophisticated and knowing what they can live with and what they don't want to live with within those loan documents.
Well, that totally makes sense. And, yeah, the larger the loan, perhaps some more flexibility in terms of compromising some type of provision or so.
And the larger the credit facility, depending on the bank, they will dictate that over a certain dollar size that the docs have to be prepared by outside legal counsel, which
right.
I know you're familiar with, Jim.
Right.
So
oh.
That is where the bank will just abandon the boilerplate docs and say, we're going to have our attorneys prepare docs and negotiate with the borrower's attorneys.
So Jim, you actually prepare the docs first?
Yeah, we've been on that side of where we prepare the docs. I've got some of my partners who do bank loan work all the time. I mean, they're doing that on a continuous basis. So
wow. So yeah. I always wondered, is it the rule of thumb, the one that prepares the documents has an advantage, or the one that reviews
it? Well, you'd like to kind of be in control of the document.
there you go.
Yeah, let's be honest about it. Control of the document is a good idea.
So that's why it supports get a great attorney, right, and a great banker, and a great CPA.
You know, before we run out of time, I just had one quick question for David. It is, knowing that you've got these banks in different states, and like our law firm, we have an office in Texas and here. I mean, if we have a client that is doing business in multiple states, your banks can coordinate, like they're doing business here and in Texas, and you know, have different facilities in various states. If they're in the state where you've got banks, you can coordinate with the different banks?
We can. I don't want to misrepresent. We're not interconnected from a systems standpoint as of today. I'm sure that's someplace we'd love to be, especially at the size of the bank. But, yes, we have clients that are in all the states that we do business with, and we do coordinate that relationship. Now, with technology today, you don't really even need to be in the same state.
Right.
We try to bank companies that are in the footprint, the market that we're in, because we want to understand that market, we want to understand the company.
Yeah.
But even with today's technology, you could bank a company in California and not have a presence in California.
Good point. Well, can you believe it? This hour just zoomed by. David, how do they get in touch with you?
They can call me at my office at 480-835-3055 or email me at david.decero@bankofarizona.com, all spelled out.
Thank you so much, Jim. How do they get in touch with you?
Best way to get a hold of me is to call me at 602-254-9900, which is our main number, and they will get the call right to me.
David DeCero, thank you so much. Bank of Arizona, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I hope it was helpful.
Thank you, David.
And Jim Hyden, always a pleasure. And we'll have some more action next month. Oh, actually, it's January already.
Next year almost.
Yeah, next year it will be. Anyway, thanks again, and we'll see everyone tomorrow on Breakthrough Thinking.